football time.
Here we go, D!
Time to get ready for the weekend.
E-man!
This is Jake and TD with Jake Lyman and ESPN Titans NFL Nation reporter Teron Davenport.
Presented by Soul Restaurant Nashville.
Your sports live here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. And the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Happy Friday, Nashville. Jake and TD, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jake Lyman, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport with you for the next hour, getting you ready for your football weekend, getting you ready for Titans and Jags coming up at Nissan Stadium on Sunday afternoon. Should be a fun show today. We're going to recap the Titans and Commanders up in Washington. A tough start for the Titans. Couldn't dig out of the hole out in Landover, Maryland. We're also going to compare those teams. I know there's been some talk about the Commanders and Titans drafting over the last few years, and also look ahead to Titans and Jags. Calvin Ridley facing his former team for the first time in two-tone blue. TD, how's it going? How's your week been?
It's been a great week. A lot of opportunities to get out there to the facility and watch a lot of football. Just with everything going, a Thursday night game was really good.
Right.
Got to see the Monday night game and, of course, the Sunday game. Yikes.
Yes, that is where we will start. Titans and Commanders at a Northwest Stadium. The first year it's not FedEx Field in a very long time. Titans falling in that game. 42-19 was the final against the Washington Commanders, but it was over about as fast as any game I have ever seen. Washington put up four touchdowns on their first four drives, and I think at that point the Titans had run eight offensive plays. Was that the total? They went three and out. Then Tony Pollard fumbled on the second play on the third drive, and then fumbled the kickoff after that. So, yeah, eight offensive plays, and Washington had already scored 28
points. Hey, two of those eight offensive plays were penalties.
Right, yeah. Two false starts on the opening drive. Before the game had even started, first play from scrimmage, J.C. Latham gets called for a false start. Two plays later, Nicholas Petit-Frere gets called for a false start, and the Titans were sitting in third and 22. There's not really a whole lot of plays that you have drawn up for third and 22. You're never going to win a game when you're down 28-0. I won't say never. There's been comebacks. But you are rarely ever going to be able to compete in a game when you're down 28-0 2 minutes into the second quarter.
Yeah.
It was not pretty from the start. And disappointing because the Titans were coming off such an emotional win down in Houston. Felt like they had hit a turning point maybe where things were starting to move in the right direction. And all that momentum just went out the door within the first quarter of that game on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, the first quarter of the game was definitely the tone setter. And it happened from the first play, as you mentioned. You had a false start and then, a one-yard gain and then a false start again. And you're right where the Titans hate to be, and that's second and long. Behind the chains, you know, second and long, and you got third and 22. It just was a really bad situation. He tried to go with a safe pass to Pollard, tackled 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and third and 22 is just not a position you want to be in. And I tell you what, the tone was set defensively for the Titans as well, and it wasn't a good tone. When you look at this, right off the bat, you had Terry McLaurin, who were going to have two touchdowns in the game. He had a 10-yard catch, and then you have a 9-yard by Noah Brown, but the big play was the 40-yarder. And if you go back and look at that, it was blocked up perfectly. You see the gap scheme really coming together. You had the tackle and the guard. They pulled, and 74, I forget who, I think it was Samuel Cosby, he was able to block up Amani Hooker perfectly because Hooker came down, and the safety's kind of like rotating. Hooker came down, and he was close to the box, and that offensive lineman just sealed him perfectly. You had the guys at the second level, Jerome Baker, Kenneth Murray. They weren't able to flow to the football, and that gap was there. And then Darryl Worley on the backside, bad angle, and next thing you know, it's a 40-yard touchdown. And when you have just a failure on multiple levels of the defense and a big play like that, and the way that Northwestern or Northwest, whatever that dump is called, the way those people reacted to that touchdown, like it erupted. And then to answer that with another three and out, it was a bad look, and they quickly were able to score again, and then you had the turnovers. When you put yourself down 28-0, I don't care what team you are, as Jeffrey Simmons said, if you're you could be the Chiefs. You know, you could be the Bills with Josh Allen, how he's helming. You could be the Eagles. You could be the Lions. 28-0 changes the way you have to call the game. It makes you more one-dimensional. You have to pass the ball a lot more. The opposing team knows that. They're able to pin their ears back, rush the passer. But then on top of that, you know, they could have the coverage. They know that the pass is coming. And it makes it so much easier to defend when you're one-dimensional. A team like the Titans, they cannot afford to be down by two touchdowns, let alone 28 points. And that was really the big problem because everything completely changed. And it just got worse and worse. Now, there were some opportunities later, but that storm, I mean, 21 points right away, it's bad.
It was Murphy's Law on Sunday. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong for the Titans, at least through the first 16 or 17 minutes. I mean, offense couldn't get anything going. Tony Pollard fumbles. The defense couldn't stop Jaden Daniels in that offense. And then, of course, special teams had to come in with a mistake as well. And Jaquan Jackson with a fumble. Doesn't seem like Brian Callahan has named who is going to be doing the returning on Sunday against Jacksonville, but
yeah. You
would have to assume it's not going to be Jaquan Jackson.
It's probably not going to be Jaquan Jackson. He's had five fumbles, muffs, whatever you want, a combination of the two. He's put it this way. He's put the ball on the ground five times. Two of them were not recovered, and one of them was in the most recent game. And if there's one thing that a coach hates, it's fumbles. And when you turn that football over, they begin to question you. And that's exactly where they are now. Now, Brian Callahan wouldn't designate who. He did mention, you know, Tyler Boyd being able to secure the punt. Remember, Tyler Boyd has a foot situation. So consider that. Mason Kinsey is on the practice squad. But, I mean, if you look at it, Mason Kinsey has been the most consistent punt returner this team has had, what, since Chester Rogers, where he was, you know, halfway. But do you realize – there hasn't been a punt return for a touchdown in 12 years.
Yeah.
It's just short of 12 years. So December 30th, it will be 12 years. Now, Darius Renault had two touchdowns return, punt return touchdown, 69-yarder and 81-yarder against the Jaguars. I don't think that streak is going to be broken against the Jaguars this week, though.
Darius Renault, I know that he actually was a very good returner for the Titans, but it is funny. The only thing I remember him for is the opening game against the Steelers about 10 years ago where he stepped back into the end zone and took a knee, and it was 2-0 before a single play had been run from scrimmage. But you're right. The Titans, the return game for the Titans, you can get lucky and get a return touchdown just by one guy being out of his gap sometimes. For it being 12 years since they've had a punt return touchdown is crazy. And
it's pretty bad.
Kick return, Darius Jennings was really the last guy who was decent back there, unless I'm forgetting somebody, but I can't really think of anybody who's been great. It's tough. Special teams has just not been good enough for the better part of the last decade. And
no.
Obviously this year, you thought maybe things were going in the right direction in the preseason. When Jaquan Jackson had a couple of big returns in the preseason, and it seemed like Colt Anderson kind of knew what he was doing. He said this week he assumed that everybody knew what they were doing. But since the regular season started, there has been almost no bright spots on the special teams outside of Nick Folk.
Yeah, I mean, that's really been, and that's what I wrote about today. I get posted this morning. The special teams has not been special. It's been more frustrating than special. And Nick Folk, I mean, look, like we're talking about 56-yarder. We're talking about 95% field goals made. We're talking about 100% extra points made. And these are all really good things. But it's just the way it's been is like the old Tom and Jerry. I said this on Robbie and Rexford, the old Tom and Jerry cartoons where you will see Tom standing in front of a wall and water starts coming out of one hole. So then he plugs the water coming out of the one hole with his left hand. And then it comes out of another. He plugs it with his right. And then he's using his toes. And next thing you know, it just overflows. That's exactly what has happened to this Titan special teams. You try to fix this thing, that pops up. And that's something that Brian Callahan mentioned. It's very frustrating when you're trying to do all that. Colt Anderson, you know, is kind of still learning his way, so to speak. I know he had the comments. It just hasn't been a good thing.
It has been a tough go of it on special teams, except for Nick Folk, again, who has been absolutely ridiculous since being traded for at the beginning of last season. You could argue, and this is no slight to Rand Carthon, you could argue that that move is Rand Carthon's best move since he became the GM. He traded a seventh-round pick for a guy who's been one of the most consistent kickers in the league over the past 2 years when kicking has not been great this year across the league. I mean, you look at Justin Tucker having his issues. Nick Folk has been as consistent as they come since he came over from New England.
Yeah, he's definitely been consistent. And I know everybody – well, not everybody. Jarrett has said that, he doesn't have a big leg. Well, I mean, he's kicked a number of 50-yarders. But he has been the most consistent. I think, you know, Colt Anderson, when he said that he kind of assumed that the guys knew what to do, you got to look at the back end of those comments too, because he did also mention like learning how these guys learn. And it's been something that you have three rookies, you have a lot of also guys who haven't played extensive special teams. It makes it difficult. You have to learn how to bring them up to speed. And that's something that he's had to build upon. But then also you got guys like a Justin Hardy. You got guys like a Luke Gifford. These are very, very experienced, high-quality special teamers. And in talking to them, there's a mindset, right, that had to shift. Luke Gifford told me that he was sick and tired of watching. This is in the story. He was sick and tired of watching other teams' special teams units as an example of how to do it right. And he was like, you know what? There's no reason why we can't be the team that others are watching. And so they had a meeting. They meet on Friday mornings before every game. It's been something that they've done. Now, the meetings became more intentional going into the Texans game. They challenged each other. They said, hey, how can we learn each other's positions? How can we learn how to match and marry punt coverage with Stonehouse punting? And it just, you saw the result in the Texans game. Bryce Oliver had that play to push it back. It essentially set up the safety with C.J. Stroud. But I say all that to say it's been a long process, a slow evolving process. It's been terrible play on special teams. Only I think they're like sixth in plays allowed of 20 yards or more, punts, returns. They're allowing almost two football fields of return yards, 190 yards. Return yard. That's like bottom five, and it's all been bad, but at a certain point, it seemed like they got tired of it and they started to turn around. There haven't been return issues. Well, there wasn't one in the Commanders game, obviously the 80-yarder in the Texans game, but they gradually have to make it better, and it's just one of three different units that are just underachieving.
We are still waiting to have a show where we don't have to talk about the special teams. The special teams are, it's like the offensive line, like the officials, they're doing a good job if you're not talking about them.
Yeah.
So let's hope that there are no major special teams issues on Sunday against Jacksonville. Titans looking for their fourth win of the season. Unable to get it on Sunday in Washington, falling to the Commanders. We're going to keep talking about those two teams coming up next. Jared Stillman has made the comparisons about the draft class from 2020 to 2022 for the Titans and the Commanders and where those teams are now. We will talk about that coming up next. Jake and TD presented by Soul Nashville here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Jake and TD, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport with you till 7 o'clock. Getting you ready for a great weekend full of football, and we are presented by Soul Nashville. Talking about the Titans, their trip up to the DMV back on Sunday, falling to the Washington Commanders. Unable to get that fourth win of the season. We'll see if they can get it done back home on Sunday, taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. But before we get to that game, TD, I know you wanted to talk about this idea that Jared has been talking about on his show all week long about how the Titans and Commanders similar draft classes between 2020 and 2022. A lot of misses in the first round, but yet one team is competing for a playoff spot. The other one is towards the bottom of the NFL. There are some similarities there, and it's funny we're having this conversation 2 years to the day that John Robinson was relieved of his duties after A.J. Brown and the Eagles beat the Titans two Decembers ago as part of that seven-game losing streak. I understand where Jared's coming from, because if you look surface level, those first-round picks,
right?
Chase Young, it was Chase Young, Jamin Davis, and
Jahan Dotson.
And you could put in Emmanuel Forbes in there, too, in 2023, who was also not turned out to be a star.
Oh, the following year.
Yeah, the next year they took him over Christian Gonzalez, which not a good move there from the Commanders. And there's a reason there's been a change in leadership over in Washington as well. But surface level, you can see it. The first-round picks for both teams have failed, yet one team is in a much better position than the other. But a large reason for that, TD, is obviously that Washington seems to have found their franchise quarterback, while the Titans are not sure that Will Levis is going to be that guy.
That's the big thing. That's the big thing, is that they found their quarterback. And in the meantime, the Titans are still looking for reinforcement that they've found theirs. And I think that's the main part of it. And it's no slight on Will Levis, but, I mean, that's fact of the matter is Jaden Daniels has played better. And then also, not only we're talking stat-wise, you talk about this rushing attack and everything, the way Jaden Daniels impacts how you have to play defense changes how they're able to run the ball. That was a big part of why they rushed for 264 yards against the Titans last week. So you factor all those things in, and yeah. Before we get into it, though, this is one of the issues, and I've told Jarrett multiple times. Nuance is a good thing. Context is awesome. It doesn't always have to be black and white. Like, you're not looking at the same exact situations in Washington as Tennessee. No two things are alike. So I get surface level comparing, but if you're going to use this as a way to say someone should be fired, I think you're wrong. Let me be clear. Rand Carthon has not done a good enough job, right? But see, there's something you could do called critique, but also have understanding, and that's something that not all of us are able to do. I understand Rand Carthon has not done a good job. I critique to his face. I told him, you know, Malik Washington, I would have drafted Malik Washington over Jaquan Jackson. I like Jaquan Jackson. Let's not get this messed up. But I thought Malik Washington was a better player. I mean, there's other players also where I've told Rand literally, like, hey, I told him, hey, look, man, I would have traded for Morgan Moses. I don't know how you did. Like, these are conversations. So that being said, when we look at this Commander situation, you mentioned Chase Young. You mentioned Jamin Davis. And you mentioned Jahan Dotson. So let's compare first-round picks, Isaiah Wilson, Caleb Farley, Treylon Burks. Now, the context to it is this. In 2022, you saw the exodus of the best receiver that has put on a Titans uniform since 2003, 2004, whenever it was that Mason left.
Right.
And you brought in a guy that was just put in a terrible situation. He's been a bust. I'm going to be frank, right? It's safe to say he's been a bust to this point, injury-wise, opportunity-wise, situational-wise. But that's a big part of the factor in where this team started to take a downturn.
Right. Washington did not trade a top five wide receiver in the NFL to take Jahan Dotson. The Titans did do that to take Treylon Burks just a few picks later. So there is context there. And I think some context also has to be taken in that Chase Young, yes, for where he was taken in the draft, he was a bust. Like, Chase Young was not worthy of the second overall pick. But he did have some decent production, much more than Isaiah Wilson did for the Titans. And also, they got a decent return for Chase Young in a trade, did they not?
They did.
As well as Jahan Dotson.
Jahan Dotson, they got a third-round pick.
Right. So,
you know, for this upcoming draft. So, it hasn't benefited them yet. But
right. But there was at least some value left with some of those first-round picks that Washington took. Yes.
Right.
Would Washington much rather have signed Chase Young to a monster extension and had him be their number one pass rusher for a decade? 100%. But they got something out of it.
Here's more nuance for the Chase Young situation.
Yeah.
He was the fourth consecutive first-round defensive lineman that they took. So that loss is more easily absorbable.
Right.
But context is always important, right? So let's go beyond that and look at these draft classes. Ironically, 2020, neither team has a player from that draft class, right? Cam Curl was probably the best pick outside. Antonio Gibson, probably the best for the Commanders. I would say Christian Fulton actually was the only.
Is anybody else from that draft even in the league still?
Yes. Darrington Evans,
right, he's still
surfaced in Buffalo.
Yes, he's still around somewhere.
Yeah, we were in Buffalo for the team to come in. And this guy came up and shook my hand and gave me dap. It was Darrington Evans. I did not recognize him.
The last time I heard of him was Chicago. I remember he was there, but I had no idea he was playing for Buffalo.
Right. Yeah, he's in Buffalo. And then also Larrell Murchison is with the Rams. But I mean, you look at that class, no one is still with the team, right? So then you move on to 2021. Okay, so we know about Farley. You got Dylan Raidens. That's it that's there for the Titans. Monty Rice, Elijah Molden, Dez Fitzpatrick.
Ooh. Rashad Weaver.
Dez Fitzpatrick. Amon-Ra St. Brown. But anyway, Rashad Weaver, Racy McMath, Brady Breece, right? So for the Commanders, Jamin Davis, we mentioned that. Sam Cosmi is – who did I mention in the opener?
He opened up the hole for yeah. Brian Robinson.
So you had him, Benjamin St. Juice, who's a starting corner.
Yep.
De'Ami Brown, who's kind of their deep threat.
Burnt but Caleb Farley 2 years ago.
That was bad. John Bates, Derek Forrest, Cam Cheeseman, William Bradley King, Shaka Tony. I remember Shaka Tony. And Dax Milne. None of them are there, right? So it's 3-1. So you go to 2022. Jahan Dotson, we know. Fidarian Mathis, Brian Robinson. He had 100-plus for the Commanders this past week. Percy Butler, Sam Howell has been up and down. He's back with them on the practice squad. Cole Turner is still with the team, not productive at all. Chris Paul, when I saw that, I was like, hey, San Antonio Spurs? Just kidding. Christian Holmes, that's it. So you got 1, 2, 3 guys still there, one actual contributor, right, for the Titans, Treylon Burks. Roger McCreary, who I think is probably neck and neck with Brian Robinson as the biggest contributor out of
all of them combined.
These draft classes. Yeah. Malik Willis, we know that. Nicholas Petit-Frere, who, actually hasn't been bad at right tackle. You had the penalty.
He has been better.
But he's been solid.
Low bar, but he's been better.
And this is the thing, and that's what is so – these guys will give you enough to be like, I believe I could make something out of it.
I can
fix
him.
But you gotta at some point, you got to stop giving tune-ups and oil change. You got to start
– You just got to get a new car.
Get a new vehicle. You know what I mean? But Hassan Haskins, who's gone. Chig – has been decent. Kyle Phillips, that was my dog, man. I miss Kyle Phillips. Theo Johnson, who's in Minnesota, and Chance Campbell, who's frequently hurt. So you look 1, 2, 3 draft classes. It's actually 4-4.
Of players still on the team.
I'm sorry. It's 6-4.
Right.
Of guys who are still on the same roster.
Washington has Cosmi, Brown, St. Juiced, Mathis, Robinson, and there's one more in there somewhere.
Cosmi, Brown, St. Juice, Robinson. I forgot about Mathis. Mathis is still on the roster. So that's 7 because you got Sam Howell and Cole Turner.
So both teams had terrible draft classes for 3 straight years, but Washington is still getting some contributors down the roster, maybe not superstars, but the Titans might have had the worst 3-year draft stretch ever. And again, there's a lot of history to look back, and I could be forgetting somebody, but it's hard to go through 3 draft classes and only have 4 contributors. And after this year, who's going to be left on the team out of those four? I bet Burks is probably gone. You would guess that Petit Frere might be gone. He might be a backup. Like, there's a chance that McCreary is the only player left from those three classes after this year.
Yeah, and I think Chig would be there. But yeah, I mean,
oh, right,
to your
I forgot
point,
about
to your point though, it's, you know, it's pretty. But what's the difference between the two franchises?
One has a quarterback.
Pretty interesting how that works, right?
Yeah,
pretty interesting.
You mentioned Dez Fitzpatrick. I don't pride myself on being a great talent evaluator. Like, there's been plenty of guys I see in the draft that I loved. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside from Stanford Ooh. Is the one guy who I loved coming out in 2019, and obviously that one didn't work out. But I do give myself a pat on the back for in 2017, when the Titans took Taywan Taylor and Jonnu Smith, I wanted Cooper Kupp and George Kittle with those two picks. And obviously, we've seen how the careers of those four have turned out. And same thing, I was begging for Amon-Ra St. Brown when the Titans traded up on day three in 2022 and took Dez Fitzpatrick instead.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's crazy. You know, he got drafted, Arcega-Whiteside got drafted before Deebo Samuel and
yep.
DK Metcalf. A.J. Brown was, what, 53, four picks ahead of
yes.
him. But, yeah, I mean, you always have that where you have guys where you're like, should have taken
a little draft crush,
and,
yeah.
And it doesn't happen. But, I mean, both of these franchises, you know, Adam Peters, he took over and he's done a great job. But I think it starts from, A, you also have to consider an experienced coach.
Right.
Right? Dan Quinn, he's starting a little ahead of Brian Callahan.
He's been to the Super Bowl.
You know, he's been to the Super Bowl. He's been a head coach before. Like, there's a little more history than with Brian Callahan. And I'm not saying all this to say, hey, forgive the Titans. No, I'm saying they have to do better, but understand that this is a process and understand that no two situations are alike.
Right.
I mean, there are other people born on July 5th, 1976 that are doing much better than I am. You know what I mean?
Right.
That doesn't mean, like, because we had the same birthday, we have the, and that's more in common than these two draft classes, these two franchises. It doesn't mean that we're going to have the same results.
Right. Correlation isn't always causation. Like,
Bingo.
It looks the same, but it doesn't always happen in the same way.
Right.
And for Washington, you're right. There's a lot less of a learning curve for Dan Quinn stepping into his second head coaching job than there is for Brian Callahan, who you can say that it's his fault that he hired first-time coordinators at all three spots, but everybody's learning on the job for the Titans right now.
Yeah.
It's going to take a little bit more time.
And again, it's not an excuse. It's not an excuse. It's an explanation. The bottom line, it hasn't. 3-9
it's gotta be better.
Is crap. They have to do better. But there's a such thing as understanding, okay,
understanding
this is
why
what's
it happened.
Behind it, right? That's all I'm saying.
Yes. And this is, again, not making excuses, because if next year, if all of these guys are back, if Rand comes back, Chad Brinker comes back, Brian Callahan mm-hmm. comes back, it's going to be a short leash. Like, they're going to have to start winning football games. But there is a reason why things have gone wrong this year. I think this is a decent way of trying to explain why this is happening.
Exactly.
Titans are 3-9, facing the Jaguars twice in their final five games. So we will see if maybe they can get a couple of wins against Jacksonville, who has not been good this year. And is now likely without Trevor Lawrence for the rest of the season after the tough hit he took from Azeez Alshire on Sunday. We will talk more about the Jaguars coming up next. Jake and TD on this Friday evening, presented by Soul Nashville here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Jake and TD, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Getting you ready for a weekend full of football, college football championship games this weekend, and of course the NFL rolling along on Sunday. Titans taking on the Jaguars, returning home, first of back-to-back games at home. We'll take on the Bengals a week from Sunday as well. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport with you. Going to start previewing this Titans and Jaguars game on Sunday. Battle of the cellar of the AFC South. Could be an important game for draft positioning. I know that we haven't talked about it a ton the last couple of weeks as the Titans have started to show some progress. But, you know, there is a case, and I'm sure there are plenty of Titans fans who will be hoping that the Titans do not win on Sunday, because The Jaguars are one of the teams ahead of them in the draft order, and with two games left, the Titans could significantly lower their draft stock if they win those games against Jacksonville. TD, this Jags team has just not been good this year, and now without Trevor Lawrence, they put him on IR. He has to miss four games. There are only five games left. I can't see a reason why he would play again this season after taking that that hit from Aziz Alshire on Sunday. So going to see Mac Jones for Jacksonville on Sunday, and I don't think this is one that is going to be highly viewed across the country on Sunday afternoon.
No, it's not going to get a lot of attention. It's funny, talking to some of the media folks in the locker room today, they were like, man, if I wasn't contracted to watch it, I probably wouldn't. And I get it, you know, but there's still good things to watch. You got Brian Thomas, who's a very outstanding player. Deep threat, really good. Obviously, Josh Hines-Allen. I think, you know, on the Titans side, who knows what exactly is going to happen with Tavondre Sweat. But, you know, watching that tandem, I think, is cool. He and Jeffrey Simmons. But, you know, when you look at this game, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, Calvin Ridley, who's the sixth captain for this game, I think those guys should have opportunities to catch passes down the field from Will Levis, because these safeties, these are guys who, you know, they've had their share of miscommunications and issues allowing footballs to get behind them, right? It's totally different from, you know, the old Bills safeties where nothing would get behind them because they're lining up 20 yards off the ball and everything. You're not having that this week. So I think that's kind of the reason why you want to watch this game. You want to see that downfield passing game be unlocked, which I think it should be.
I think that's the only reason that I'm going to watch this game is to see Will Levis and, you know, Calvin Ridley facing his former team. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, like you said, the Honda Accord has 8 touchdowns in 8 games.
Tyke Tober, the receiver coach. I asked him what he thought of that. He said, oh, no. He done upgraded to a Mercedes. maybe the C-class right now.
Hey, he might be able to actually upgrade to a Mercedes if the Titans do extend him, which, again, we mentioned a few weeks ago, they should at this point. Absolutely. He's proven his worth to this team, especially over the last couple of weeks. Will Levis hitting him twice for touchdowns on Sunday in Washington. I think that's the only reason I'm going to tune in for this game is Will Levis over the last 4 weeks. I think everybody can agree that he's looked a lot better. And I mentioned before we started recording, I saw a tweet from, I can't remember who it was, but they were showing the 17 game. If you expanded out his last four games to a 17 game sample size, he would throw for 4,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 8 picks. You can't really expand off of it, but if he continues on this pace, I think he's proven himself that he could be the quarterback in 2025. This is kind of a game where you would feel like he's got to take advantage. This is not a good Jaguar secondary. I think we need to see Will Levis put together a really good game against the Jaguars in both of these matchups against Jacksonville if he wants to be under center in 2025.
Yeah, and these are huge opportunities for him. Now, here's the thing, right? We get so caught. This is, again, where nuance and context is required. Will Levis has made progress, right? We're seeing good things. You know, you see him. One of my favorite plays that he had against the Commanders was when he rolled out and he dirted the ball instead of forcing it somewhere. This is what he should have been doing in the beginning of the season.
Right.
Right? So understand that progress is good, but he's progressing to a point where it's behind schedule.
He should have been here 2 months ago.
Right. So that being said, you need to jump onto schedule or back ahead of schedule, which is what you could do with an outstanding passing game against the Jaguars, which is why it's so important for him to figure out a way. Again, you don't want to chase the plays. You want to go ahead and allow them to happen, but you want to seek them, right? And you want to take advantage of those opportunities, and they're going to be here this week.
And we've started to see the flashes from Levis again over the last four games. We saw two great throws to Calvin Ridley in the Chargers game, the 98-yard touchdown to Westbrook-Ikhine against the Vikings, the deep ball to Westbrook-Ikhine and Calvin Ridley in Houston. And then, of course, on Sunday against Washington, touchdowns to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine twice. And, man, that throw to Calvin Ridley on third and long. That is not a play that a lot of quarterbacks can make.
That's the stuff that makes you like, yeah,
you can't
maybe
keep
give
up
him a
on
chance.
This guy yet.
Yeah, and that's why I think polarizing is a perfect word for Will Levis. Yep. And it's been that way all the way dating back to Penn State where, like, he'll do something, you're like, good Lord, you know? And he just has to find a way to be more consistent.
I think we need to see a complete game from Levis on Sunday, because even with the progress that he's shown over these last four games, three of those games, the Titans were in no position to win it. Chargers, Vikings, and Commanders, the Titans were not in that game late, which the goal of a quarterback is to win a football game.
Mm-hmm.
And in the game he won, he threw a back-breaking pick six that almost cost them the game in the second half. So there hasn't been a game, even with the strides that he's taken, where I've come out of it feeling like that was a great game from Will Levis. He's had a lot of good games. I think we want to see a great game against a team like Jacksonville that really has nothing to play for. There's not a lot of talent over there. You're at home. I think this is the type of game where we could see Will Levis start to change the mind of more Titans mm-hmm. fans. Because mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of Titans fans that are starting to come back on Will Levis, but maybe a good game here against the Jaguars, and the Bengals defense hasn't been great this year at all. He could put together back-to-back good weeks at home. I think that starts to get people more on board with him being the quarterback.
Next. And you know Brian Callahan is going to want to shine against his former team. So, look, I look at it this way, right? This Titans team, they're not in a situation where you could say any opponent is a layup. But if there was one, it would be this one. So, you know what? It's layup line. When you're in a layup line before the game, right, you want to show, right? So, go ahead, instead of laying it up, dunk that thing, right? And that's what I mean when I say have an outstanding performance.
We need some style points from Will Levis on Sunday. We've been talking about some college football too. Some of these teams trying to get their way into the playoff, you want the style points. Will Levis, with the way he started this year, he's going to need some style points to prove that he's supposed to be the guy last year. I think I said it last week that if Will Levis had started the season with these four games instead of the four games that he did start it with, I think Titans fans wholeheartedly would be saying Will Levis has shown the progress that we've wanted him to early on. Now can he build on it? But now he's kind of running out of time. We're into December. We need to see that he can go win a football game for this team, even if it is against a team like the Jaguars.
Yep.
You mentioned there are no layups for the Titans. We're going to talk about this game on Sunday. Is it inexcusable for the Titans to lose to this Jaguars team that is just reeling, does not have their quarterback? We will talk about that in our final segment here. Jake and TD, presented by Soul Nashville on this Friday evening here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Final segment on this Friday, Jake and TD here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, previewing Titans and Jaguars coming up at Nissan Stadium on Sunday afternoon. Titans are 3-9, trying to get that fourth win of the year, first of two late season matchups with Jacksonville. TD, I teased going into the break that for this Titans team, when you only have three wins this year, there are no layups. There are no games that you can go into and say, I feel super confident that the Titans are going to win this football game. But man, the Jaguars are not good. They don't have their quarterback. This should be one that the Titans need to win. And I think for Brian Callahan and his coaching staff, this is one, if they're going to prove that they are making progress and they're starting to figure this thing out in their first year, these are the types of games that you have to go out and win.
Yeah, you have to go out and win. I mean, last week was the type of game that you have to go out and win. But after losing that game, it's a different level of projection for this team. Right now, the projection, the players will tell you they still want to make the playoffs. Obviously, they do. But right now, the projection is to create a winning culture. That's what you have to do with these last five games, establish a winning culture. And a winning culture is one that beats teams that are equal or lower than you. This Jaguars team is just that. And so that's why it's very important not only for them to beat them, but they need to come out early and establish a tone. This is a team that, you know, you look over the last organization, let's put it that way, over the last 3 years, like they haven't exactly been truly shut down at Nissan Stadium. You got to give these fans some type of excitement, and the best way to do that is to win this game and win it convincingly.
You got back-to-back home games here. We talked about it last week. It's been a big talking point around the station. The Titans have not won back-to-back games in over 2 years. You'd feel like this is an opportunity to do that here with back-to-back home games. You got the Jaguars, who are obviously one of the worst teams in the league, don't have Trevor Lawrence, and the Bengals, who, despite having Joe Burrow, who's putting up MVP-level numbers over there on the offensive side, they still can't seem to win a football game, losing shootouts every week. These could be two opportunities for the Titans to finally get that monkey off their back and win back-to-back games. Yes, it hurts your draft position, but like you said, the goal for Brian Callahan and his staff and this team has to be to figure out how to win football games.
Well, let me say this about draft positioning, right? I get it. You want a higher draft pick. Naturally, you do want that. But the way this draft is set up, so outside of Shedeur Sanders, there's a cluster of 5 to 7 guys where it's like, okay, he could be the second pick or he could be the 8th pick.
Yeah.
There's no big thing. Me personally, the opportunity cost of creating a winning culture is worth it, because we're not talking about the difference of a prospect that's an A-plus level and a prospect that's an A-level. We're talking about two prospects along the same line. There's no reason to lose out.
You're right. It does feel like there's no Jadeveon Clowney out there. Like, I know it's not a big quarterback class, but there's no Jadeveon Clowney. There's no Aiden Hutchinson in this draft. Like, those are A-plus prospects coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got a lot of A-minus prospects this year.
They're
all good. Like, Will Campbell out of LSU, very good player. Abdul Carter out of Penn State, very good player. Tet McMillan out of Arizona.
Kyle Kennard out of South Carolina.
Right,
Kyle Kennard. Dominated Will Campbell.
Yes.
These are all guys that are in, and I mean, think about it. Okay, you're not going to draft Will, not likely to draft Will Campbell, but flip him to right tackle. Like, so
that's not going
to
happen.
I mean, look, there's a good selection that, again, going from 9 to 3, so on and so, it's not a huge difference in player this year.
Yeah, and I don't think the Titans are going to win out at this point. Like, if you go 8 and 9, you might find yourself in the mid to late teens, which I don't think that helps the Titans out. But if you win out, you feel pretty good about your team heading into next year, obviously. But I think Titans are probably going to win 2 or 3 of these last 5 games, given the competition that they're facing. You've got twice against the Jaguars. You got the Colts. You've already beaten the Texans, and that game is at home in the Oilers uniforms. And you've got the Bengals at home. You're going to win 2 or 3 of those games. That probably slots you late top 10, early teens, which you're going to get a good player. I know Luther Burden is a guy that we've brought up that probably is still going to be there at 10, 11, 12, and I think would be a perfect fit for what the Titans are looking for, a wide receiver.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And, I mean, obviously, you know, Travis Hunter factors into this. You can never have too many playmakers, and he's probably the nation's best playmaker. So you do have that. I think it's just – I just don't buy into the losing culture that you established by tanking. It's just not one. And, you know, being someone who lived in Philly during the trust the process
76,
setting with the Sixers, it's just not worth it. It's not.
No, I'm with you. And I think it's going to be tough for the Titans, even if they tried against the Jaguars, to lose both of those games. Like, you could get lucky and win one of those against the Jags the way that they've played this year. And again, it's Mac Jones starting at quarterback. So we'll see on Sunday. Titans at home taking on the Jaguars, noon kick. Follow along with TD for all your coverage as the Titans take on the Jags on Sunday. TD, another fun show. Hope you enjoy a good weekend of football. I know we got all the college football championship games this weekend. So could see some movement in the playoff,
yeah.
And we'll get our bracket coming up on Sunday too. So
looking forward to that, man.
We'll have to talk about some of those first round matchups next week on the show as well.
No doubt.
Fun show. Jake and TD signing off here on this Friday afternoon. Speaking of conference championship games in college football, we got one coming up right after this here on The Game. Tulane and Army in the AAC championship. Not a ton of playoff implications there, but should be a fun one as Army looks to complete what has been a great season with a conference championship. That's up next. That does it for us. Jake and TD here on this Friday evening here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.